You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans, the podcast that takes you on a captivating journey into the heart of Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. Each episode, we delve into the rich history, vibrant culture, and hidden gems of this beautiful country. Through engaging conversations and personal anecdotes, we aim to bridge the gap between the Balkans and the rest of the world. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired, entertained, and connected.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
For people that follow the podcast, you'll know that I like to talk about being a foreigner in Bosnia and Herzegovina today. We started in the late 20th century and now we've entered the 21st century. And how I view my life, my daily experiences and everything else. And over the past months, definitely quite a few months, I've been interacting with another Brit who's not here in the Balkans, but he's back in Bromley in Kent, not a million miles away from me in West London, where I was born, actually. His name is Martin Gannon. And Martin and I have something really in common, and that is that 40 years ago, Martin was trailblazing a Brit in another country then, the country that came before the one that I'm living in at the moment, Yugoslavia. And history has told us that Yugoslavia has broken up into six countries. Now, by pure coincidence, 2 or 3 days ago, I read an article about what it was like living in a single party state. And that state was Yugoslavia. So today on the podcast, I am joined. We hope that the line will keep up. It's horrible weather here, so maybe we'll get a power cut. But whatever, we'll get through it. Martin Gannon in Bromley. Martin, first of all, when did you come to the former Yugoslavia? We won't call it the former Yugoslavia. We'll just call it Yugoslavia. When did you come to Yugoslavia and why?
The reason I came to Yugoslavia was I was treating my mother to a holiday. She wanted to go to Mallorca, but at the time in 1980, you had to go to a travel agent to book your holiday. There wasn't all this internet stuff and everything. Went to the travel agent and they said, sorry, it's full up, but there's this place called Yugoslavia. So, okay, I'll go there then. We went on holiday to a place called Rabat in Istria. And at the time, I was a manager of a bingo club in Peckham, top rank club, part of the rank organization. While on holiday, my mother was chatting to another holiday rep, not our one from Yugotours. And she said, I'm having to cancel the bingo night. As mothers do, she volunteered me to do it for her. And then when I did it, all the clients said they'd had a great time. So the holiday rep turned out not to just be a rep, but the area manager for Saga, and offered me a job. And that's how I started. A couple of weeks later, I was in Poreč at the Hotel Matarada looking after Saga clients.
What was the perception of Yugoslavia back in there? In those days, for British people, was it a top tourist destination back then?
Yes, it was. It was pretty much the number one destination for holidaymakers from the UK. Saga Holidays, in fact, had people there pretty much all year round, staying in the hotels, because it was cheaper to stay in the hotel than to have your gas and electricity on in England. And you got fed, watered, and excursions. Yes, it was basic, but it was nice. It was not, they weren't luxury, but it was very comfortable.
I was about to say the difference between, yes, we'll call it a socially managed state, socialist state, communist state, and what we were experiencing back in the 1980s must have been a bit like chalk and cheese. What were your first impressions, though, when you arrived to meet local people for the first time and eat local food?
Oh, well, I was delighted, though I was mostly working in the hotel then, in the 1980s, because don't forget, in 1980, Tito had just died. There was quite a sort of a nervousness, worry. What was the future? Because he'd run the country for so long, the new system, but he'd actually planned and set up a system for people to take over. So people were a little nervous, but they were happy to see tourists and happy that they were working. To understand, it was a self-management system. So everybody had a job. And if you spent money in the hotel, the staff would be getting the money as well. It was quite a good system. It was different from the communist system, which years later I ended up in.
When you arrived, did you have to worry about language problems, or was it an isolation within the hotel when you started off? Because when I came here, I was shocked by the language, not because it just sounded something like I'd never heard before. I thought it was a Russian-sounding language, and long words, and always spoken in a very, I don't mean to be denigrating to any Italians that are listening to this, but very emotional, very Latin. So communication problems to start off with as the young Martin sets foot in Southeast Europe?
No, in Porridge especially. They were well, all the waiters, management, even the police spoke English. Now, why I mention the police is because I actually did a lot of excursions to Venice from Porridge by coach. And I used to take quite a few Yugoslavs with me. And the police spoke to me, warning me that the actual passport was very valuable and to look after any Yugoslavs that went with me. So, they spoke to me in English. I had no problems in communicating. And when I went in for my work permit into the police station, they were very friendly and helpful and told me not to worry about it in the future. They knew where I was. So there were no problems.
Was it difficult, a process to get, you know, a residency visa? And I ask that because today, for a foreigner here, one, it's not easy just by asking, I'd like to stay and live in Bosnia-Herzegovina. There are rules now. You either have to be married to a citizen or be in a long-term relationship with a citizen. And I do believe if you've purchased property here, you're entitled to apply for a residency permit. But I speak from just my own personal experience. Apart from that, there's not a route to getting residency or a long-term visa. Was it the same for you then, or as you said, the police were very helpful and guided you through it?
Well, for myself, because I was working and I was taking part in tourism, which was important, there were no difficulties for me to stay in the country. I could stay 6-8 months or even longer if I wanted. And as long as I'd recorded my stay with the police and they knew where I was, and the fact that I'd be working in the tourism, attracting tourists, that aspect of it, they were fine with me. There were no problems whatsoever.
You said that you arrived in Porridge. Is that where you stayed, or did you move somewhere else for the most of your time that you spent here?
No, I started off in Porridge and then around December moved to Vienna for Saga again. And then from Vienna, I was taking American tourists all the way down to Dubrovnik and then into Montenegro. So going down through Zagreb, Plitvice, and all the way down. But so I was doing coach tours, and I would mainly do that during the winter months, incredibly, even through the snow. And then again, when April came and more of the Saga clients came, I would go the next season. I went to Rovine, and then the following season, I was actually in Rabat again. So I moved around some of the seasons, but during the winter times for 3 years, I did coach tours through the whole of the former Yugoslavia. I learned a lot of the roads, the routes, had some exciting adventures with my coach drivers, and they were an incredible time.
The places that you're mentioning are in today's Croatia, along that wonderful Adriatic coast. Did the job give you any opportunities to venture further afield, possibly into Bosnia and Herzegovina, down into Montenegro, or across into Serbia at all?
Yes, some of the coach tours were into Montenegro or down to Lake Ohrid. Each of the different coach tours were different areas. So sometimes I'd go and pick up my passengers in Zagreb, and sometimes it would be from Vienna. But it fluctuated. Every few weeks, I would get a list of where I was going and then head off. But the company, the two companies used were General Tourist and Atlas, two old names. And also we worked a bit with Putnik from Serbia as well. So that was, it was a nice mixture of agents and people.
We've been chatting via email and this morning I rushed out of the office here, even though it's raining, to look up in the sky and to see the one of the twice weekly flights from Belgrade coming into Banja Luka Airport here. And we have now some 14, maybe 16 now, destinations. But I looked up and there was this old Antonov twin prop aircraft coming in, carrying the logo of Air Serbia. Obviously, each country now has its own airline. Except Bosnia. Yeah, Bosnia doesn't have its own at the moment. However, I thought, Martin said something about Yat, the airline of the former Yugoslavia, which was held in high esteem across the world. What's your memories of being involved with Yat?
Again, from 1983, I left Saga to join a small company called Pilgrim Holidays. And there I began working on the Dalmatian islands, especially Hvar and Starigrad. After that, I then went to work for Inex Adria, / Phoenix, which was the Slovenian airline and Croatian-Serbian tour operator. And then after that, went to work for Intersun in Gibraltar and a few other places. And from there, I got headhunted to Yugoslav Airlines and began working for them in London and Belgrade. And I was then, Yugoslav Airlines had bought the little company Pilgrim Holidays as their sort of tour operator wing. So I became operations manager, sales manager, a bit of everything, promoting tourism in former Yugoslavia. And also in the summer, but also I was pushing heavily for operations in the winter, because at that time, Yugoslav Airlines was very big. It had flights to India, Delhi, New York, China, Peking, Australia. We had lots of flights all around the world, and we had a big lot of passengers that I could utilize to give them short breaks or long breaks, all sorts of things. But one of the things that I very much developed was in Bosnia-Herzegovina. And of course, that was Medjugorje. And one of the things that wound me up was that a lot of pilgrimage companies charged enormous sums of money to take pilgrims to a pilgrimage site. And I knew the costings of a holiday, of a break. So I remember going in, talking to Mr. Valcic, my director, who was from Mostar, and showing him my idea. The next day we flew to Belgrade and put it forward to the committee. Because in those days, a self-management company, you had to put it to a group of the workers. And if they liked the idea, then they would do it. They liked my idea. And so we began operations from Heathrow to Mostar Airport, bringing in literally thousands of pilgrims at a much cheaper rate than all the other tour operators, causing them to go out of business, leave that area. And we pretty much monopolized the tourists from the UK to Medjugorje.
That's amazing when you consider that Medjugorje is a pilgrimage site for, in the main, Roman Catholics, and Yugoslavia at the time was a, and I'll put this in heavy quotation marks, socialist / atheist country. How did the committee react to that? Because from what I'm led to believe, to become a member of the party, for example, a strong religious affiliation was undesirable, if we put it that.
Yes, the whole point of it, what I was trying to show, was that I would undercut the other operators on the route. Therefore, there would be for the airline and for the Pilgrim Holidays, which were part of the airline, there would be a very profitable operation. And the operation was planned originally for a DC-9 to go on the route, But there were so many bookings, we had to put a 727 on the route every Friday and every Monday. It worked, and they were very happy that it was making money. And that Yugoslav Airlines at the time was a very forward company. It was very profitable, and all the staff at the end of the year would get a share of the profits. If there was anything that looked like it was going to make money, people were interested in doing it.
I want to come along in a minute to talk about your views on tourism now compared to back then, because I just read a very interesting interview that you had with Total Croatia News. But before we go to there, I've got three questions to ask you. They're all on the fly. I hope I'm not going to catch you out. So the first one is, at back then, what was your favourite place in the whole country that you love so much?
That's cruel. to explain, when I worked on Hoa, my father had TB when he was younger. Now, in the Yugoslav times, and Hoa town was a clinic, a specialist clinic for TB and other chest complaints, asthmas, anything like that. And the reason for it was the island is renowned for helping the health. So when they went there, my dad would feel 10 years younger. So that was it. They moved and lived there. First, they lived in Čitluk in Bosnia-Herzegovina, but they had to move from there, and they moved to Jelsa on the island of Hoa, which is an absolutely gorgeous little place. And they had a lovely life there for 10, 11 years. That is one of my favourite places. And Starigrad, which is just nearby Jelsa. And of course, across the country, Zagreb's beautiful. I love going to Belgrade. Love going up to Koponik, Mostar. Loved Mostar. Ah, there's so many places around the whole country that I still would love to go to see and be in again.
Second question is another favourite. Favourite food when you used to go out?
Čevapčići, pleskovica, fresh fish, sarma. There's so much. I could stay here for the next 2 hours telling you things.
And finally, because we're going to take a short musical break, if this works out, back then in the 1980s, unless I've got this wrong, I don't think there was too much Western music playing. Maybe I've got that wrong. But it was the heyday of what is now referred to as XYU rock. What was your favourite piece of music at that time?
Oh, dear me. I love quite a few different groups, but there was plenty of Western music. Oh, my gosh. I can remember dancing some nights away in Rovin in the nightclubs to some very dodgy music. But anyway, to be honest with you, I can't remember so much. I was a bit young and a bit wild in those days and rather enjoyed the Slivovich too much, I think.
Okay, so I'll choose one piece of music for you and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to the Living in Bosnia and Herzegovina podcast. Tužna je naša ulica, od kada nisi tu. Jer tužnu pjesmu pjevaju oni što ostaju. Iste smo snove sanjali, istom se nadali. Drugi su igru vodili i snove ukrali. Nije mi žao što si otišla, znam da si morala. Jedino boli malena. You're listening to the Living in Bosnia and Herzegovina podcast.
So we're back. Martin Gannon's in Bromley in Kent. For those that are listening and have no idea of UK geography, it's a little bit that sticks out towards Dover, and then there's a little bit of water between us and our nearest European neighbours, France. But it's Kent is where Martin is today. A lot has happened recently here, and by recently, 25 years ago was the end of the conflict in Bosnia and Herzegovina, which I think put the nail in the coffin for the breakup of the country that you knew originally as Yugoslavia. And a lot has changed in so many respects. Before COVID, did you come back a lot and see how things had changed? And what were your reactions to what you saw?
I was coming back from, actually, I never stopped coming back. I was in Jelsa, on Hvar, a few times, even during the war, and visiting my parents, who were still there. And I was also in Split and doing a few things there in Split as well, interestingly enough, with the British Army. But after that, during the 90s, I helped join a small company that was restarting pilgrimages from the UK. That was about 94, 95. And we had one plane, and we were on a charter route from Gatwick to Split, and then coaching people up to Medjugorje. And again, it was starting to work and starting to build up. But our ultimate was to increase the holiday tourism along the coast. But unfortunately, a new pope, which has completely gone out of my head, came in to power and suddenly decreed that no pilgrimages could be led by priests or bishops to Medjugorje. So the whole thing collapsed in around 95. And after that, I went back to rank organisation and became a cinema manager and worked my way up to become general manager in Leicester Square, doing all the big premieres and everything. With that job, I actually had quite a lot of leave. I was able to travel to Belgrade to see friends. I was able to travel again all over the country, Ljubljana. And for me, it was very interesting seeing how things became privatised, became more open, more discussions, more private cafes. But the other thing which was the sort of increase in privatization, but also poverty as well, because at that stage, because of the change, because everybody had been looked after in the socialist system, and this change to capitalism shook everything up. So the first sort of 5 years or so were quite difficult, and to changing the systems and changing how administration was done. So that was a challenging period.
I was fascinated by the interview that you had with Total Croatia News, and I'll put a link to where any in the description to this podcast where anybody is listening to it, so that they can see exactly what I'm talking about. You were asked there about in the tourist situation today, even though it is, yes, post-COVID as we record this in Croatia. But I saw so many huge similarities between that and here in Bosnia and Herzegovina, which is a country, let's cut to the chase, that is almost on its knees now. It is struggling every which way, but has this jewel, they have this diamond in their hands of one of the most beautiful countries that there is, with not only stunning scenery, but amazing history, a place where three cultures collide together. It's a tourist designer's, I don't know, a dream, really. And you were saying you had some criticisms, I think, about the way Croatia's doing it and some suggestions for how people could possibly encourage tourism. I think whatever your comments were about Croatia resonates very much here. How do you see it now? There you were as an Englishman in Croatia, former Yugoslavia all those years ago, getting people to motivate themselves, to become more open, to take a few risks. For example, let's go to Medjugorje, or let's keep the winter tourism going and everything like that. What are your thoughts from what and what you hear and read now about this area, tourism-wise?
For me, Bosnia-Herzegovina is an absolutely stunning. I have managed to travel through a good part of it, Sarajevo, and around when I was doing the coach tours, and I saw the remarkable scenery and how beautiful. And people now are very interested in nature, environmental issues, walking, being outdoors. And Bosnia-Herzegovina has all that. And it could really, if there was a good marketing campaign and also good connections to the outside world, then tourism, I'm sure, would start picking up. Because when people go there and see the wonderful nature and the fantastic fresh food, it's really big. One of the things I mentioned was that, which has become during COVID, weirdly popular in the UK, is fresh water swimming in the outdoors all year round. People are going into lakes and rivers and going for a nice swim. I might think they're a bit mad, but it's actually a very popular thing. And that's something, there's so many lovely rivers and everything in Bosnia, that could be an opportunity to promote. There are lots of small things that would fill a plane up. So different groups interested in different things, archaeology, history, hiking, walking. And that's how I used to do it when I worked at YAT, is find lots of these small groups of people interested in small things. And before you knew it, you had a full plane.
I totally agree. Where we are in the north of the country, the entity called the Republika Srpska, Tourism Republika Srpska has produced two tourism videos. I have to say, they are quite fantastic, and they have won awards at tourism fairs, international tourism fairs around the world. But when I talk about this locally, I get looked at in such a weird way. And I said, you spent all this money on these two fantastic films, but where's the footfall? Where are the people coming? And it seems that institutionally, they don't get it. There's this, I would say you've spent hundreds of thousands of euros on two films. You could have used that money to attract people to come. And as you say, especially today's world with Facebook and everything else, for you, if you go back now, if you'd had Facebook back in the day, you could have found these little groups a lot easier than you could do back then, right?
Yes, absolutely. I worked through lots of independent travel agents. That was the only way you could do it then. And I went to tourism travel markets. I kept an eye out for any unusual things. And basically, the company would, for me, would produce small brochures and everything. I didn't spend a lot of money, but I managed to generate business that kept the seats full during the winter. And also the other factor, during that time, because it was self-management, people couldn't be really unemployed. So they had to work, but they had to run the planes, they had to run things. And in that way, you had to try and fill them up. So there was a constant promotion, like, can we find something to fill this plane? Can we do this? Can we do that? Can we fill the hotel? So there was a constant sort of drive to achieve things, which I feel sometimes now is a bit lacking. It's not quite there as it used to be.
You could do that all over again now in a second career, because being online and in a virtual environment, I mean, you could most probably achieve all those things, that all those dreams that you had years and years ago. We've been hit badly, as the whole world has, with COVID. And for me, I haven't travelled out of the country outside BIH for nearly 2 years now. And I'm looking forward at least to go and see some of my family that are back in the UK. Are you planning on coming back? Is it still in your blood?
Don't because get I food parcel.
I'll bring you a food parcel, don't worry. Do you suffer the same as I do, which is once the Balkans has bit you, you can never get rid of it? It's a bit like the Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave. Plans to come back?
Yes, absolutely. I'm totally bitten by that part of the world and desperate to come back. If I can, I'm lucky because I have another passport, so I don't have to worry about EU problems. Eventually, hopefully, I can come back and live somewhere safely and happily, because I've lots of friends there who I've missed terribly, and definitely want to get back. It's the food, the friendliness, and just the people themselves are just something special.
Martin, thank you very much for giving me your time today. It's been quite eye-opening and enlightening, and I can't wait to meet up IRL, which I believe young people say is in real life. Not only to put the world to, but to mine that extensive tourism experience that you have, because I'm getting the feeling that, although I said I would never do this, it frustrates me so much these days that I'm thinking, if you won't do it, then I'll have to do it for you. But that's for a conversation when we meet in real life. Thanks so much for taking the time today, as I say, and also for being an amazing supporter of what Tamara and I are generating for the world from here in the village. I hope that people hook onto it and say, I want to see some of this. I want a bit of this action.
Yes, it's a most brilliant country to go and visit. So please go and visit Bosnia-Herzegovina. It's fresh air, fresh mountains, fresh food, and Tamara's cooking, which I really want to try.
And that's a wrap for this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed finding out a little more about both Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. If you've enjoyed this journey as much as we enjoy bringing it to you, please take a moment to leave us a review and subscribe to our podcast. Your feedback helps us tremendously and makes a huge difference. Thank you once again for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.